Her hand tightened into a fist. He's not dead. I was just talking to him. No one moved. She beat her free fist against his chest. He's not dead. He's not. Everyone looked away. No one said anything. She finally glanced at the men around the small fires, at all the hanging heads. Her hand fell to her side. He killed 17 of them, she said to Captain Ryan. He killed 17 of them, she said louder to the rest of them. Captain Ryan nodded. He did well. We are all proud of him. She watched the faces as they all finally came up. Forgive me, all of you, please forgive me. You have all done a good job. The fury had gone out of her. You have all made me proud. You are heroes in my eyes and in the eyes of the Midlands. The men brightened a bit. Some went back to eating, while others started passing around tin bowls and spooned beans from pots on the fires. Some tore off chunks of flat camp bread to dunk in the beans. Where's Chandelin? She asked, as she pushed her feet into the boots Tossadin handed her. He went with the archers. I imagine that he's probably shooting arrows into Daharans right now. Captain Ryan leaned toward her as the brothers moved away and lowered his voice. I'm glad these three are on our side. You should have seen them taking out the sentries. Prindon especially is like death itself with that troga of his. It was eerie, the way they were first here and then over there, and you never saw them move. I never heard a thing. They just appeared with the sentries' uniforms. You should see them do that out in the open grassland in broad daylight. Kaelin looked him up and down. She managed a small smile. Quite handsome. You wear it well. He pulled at his shoulder. I don't know how they wear this heavy mail all the time. He fingered a slash in the leather. But I was glad to have it on. How did everything go? How many men did you lose? We got nearly everything we went after. In these uniforms, we didn't have to do much fighting. Hardly anyone noticed us, except the ones we killed. We only lost a few men. He glanced back over his shoulder. Looks like you caught the worst of it. I took a rough count as you came in. We lost close to 400 of the 1,000 swordsmen who went in. She stared past him at the men around the fires. We came close to losing them all. She brought her attention back to the captain. But they did themselves proud, the drivers too. He cradled his bandaged hand. From the ones I talked to, I don't think many took less than 10 of the enemy, and many took a lot more. We took quite a chunk out of the order's hide. Kaelin swallowed. They took quite a chunk out of ours. Did the men do like I told them? He asked. Did they keep any trouble away from you? They kept the enemy so far from me I couldn't tell you what they looked like. I'm afraid I wasn't able to add much honor to your sword, though it was a comfort to have along. I pray you will at least be honored that I carried it in battle. He frowned, leaning to the side, trying to get a better look at her face in the firelight. Your lip looks cut. He glanced at her warhorse as the men were taking the tack off. That horse is covered in blood. You're covered in blood too, aren't you? It was an accusation, not a question. Kaelin stared off at a fire. Some drunk threw something at me. It cut my lip. That wounded soldier I was bringing in bled to death on my horse and on me. Her eyes drifted among the young faces around fires. I wish I could have done half as well as they. They were magnificent. He grunted suspiciously. I'm just relieved to see you. Is everything else in order? The archers? The cavalry? We must make the best use of our opportunity while they're drunk and sick with the poison. We must make the most of this weather, too. We can't let up for a moment. One lightning strike after another, no engagement, glancing attacks, always from a different place. They all know their jobs and are waiting their turn. The archers should be finished soon, then the cavalry, then the pikemen. We're ready for their sentries when they send them out. Our men will sleep in turns, but from now on the Imperial Order will get no sleep. Good. These men need rest. In the morning it will be their turn again. She lifted a finger to the captain. Remember the most important thing. She quoted her father. The weapon that most readily conquers reason is terror and violence. Don't forget that. It's the tool they use, and now we must turn it on them. Prindon came back into the firelight. Mother Confessor, my brother and I made you a shelter while we waited for your return. We have your clothes there and hot water so you may wash yourself if you wish. She tried not to show how eager she was to wash off the reek of war. Thank you, Prindon. He held his arm out, showing her the way to the small clearing. The brothers had built a roomy shelter of balsam boughs covered over with snow. She crawled through the low opening to find candles inside. The snowy ground was covered with a mat of boughs also, giving the shelter the pleasant aroma of balsam. A steaming bucket of water had just been set next to hot rocks placed in the center. She warmed her fingers over the rocks. The brothers had made her a warm and snug home for the night. She could have wept at their thoughtfulness. Her pack was there, and her clothes folded in a neat pile. Kaylin took off her necklace, the one Addie had given her, the one with the round bone. It was the only thing she had worn into battle. She clutched it to her cheek a moment before she washed it. It reminded her of the one her mother had given her. She dunked her whole head in the bucket, washed her hair, and then methodically washed the rest of herself. It was only a sponge bath, but it still felt wonderful to wash off the blood and the feel of the hands. She had to force herself to think of other things as she washed to keep from being sick. She thought of Richard, thought of his boyish smile that never failed to make her grin, thought of his gray eyes that could look right into her. When she finished washing, she lay down, drying her hair on the rocks. She desperately needed sleep. She still hadn't recovered her confessor's power since using it on the one-eyed man, Orsk. She could feel the emptiness in the pit of her stomach, a hollow where the power belonged. It would be a while longer until it was restored. She wouldn't be able to shake the sick, dizzy exhaustion, though, until she had sleep. She longed to lie down in her bedroll and sleep. It had been so long, and she was so sleepy. But she couldn't, not yet. She put the necklace back over her head, and then laboriously pulled on her clothes. From her pack, she recovered an unguent and spread it on her cut lip. When she replaced it, she saw the bone knife Chandelin had given her and tied it around her arm again. She was so tired she could hardly force herself up, but she had something to do before she slept. She had to be with her men. She wouldn't let them think she didn't hold their interest highest in her heart. They had offered their lives. The least she could do was show her appreciation on behalf of the Midlands. Clean, her long hair full and shiny once more, and dressed at last in layers of warm clothes and her mantle, she wound her way among the campfires. She listened with serious attention to the babbling stories of some and the quiet, brief words of others. She spoke with all who had questions, gave smiles of reassurance, and let them all know how proud she was of what they had done. She knelt by the wounded, checking to see if they were warm enough, and laid a hand to their cheeks, giving comfort and wishing them good health and quick healing. She, too, felt relief when they were calmed by her touch. At a fire surrounded by 10 silent soldiers, one young man was trembling, but she didn't think it was from the cold. "How are you doing? Are you all right? Are you getting warm?" Her presence surprised and brightened him. "Yes, Mother Confessor." A racking shiver rattled his teeth. "I never thought it would be like that." He composed himself and indicated the others. "These are my friends. 6 didn't come back." She held her mantle closed with one hand and brushed the hair back off his forehead with the other. "I'm sorry. I too grieve for them. I just wanted you men to know that you made me proud. You were as brave as any soldiers I've ever seen." He chuckled nervously. "We'd all be dead if it wasn't for you. We were being driven back, hacked to pieces, and then you charged right into the enemy all by yourself. They all turned their attention to you, and then, while they were confused, we counterattacked. What you did saved us." He shook his head. "I wish I had killed half as many men tonight as I saw you kill." They all nodded their earnest agreement. He brushed trembling fingers across his face. "Thank you, Mother Confessor. If it weren't for what you did, we would all be dead, too." He gave her a twitch of a smile. "If I had the choice, I'd choose to follow you into battle over Prince Harold himself." "Pretty good with a sword, is she?" She started at the voice. The soldier turned to see Captain Ryan standing behind her. "I think she could teach us swordsmen a thing or two. You wouldn't believe what she..." Kaylin patted his shoulder. "Have you had something to eat?" He pointed to the pot of beans on the fire. "Would you share some with us, Mother Confessor?" She almost lost control of her queasy stomach. "You men eat. You need the strength. Thank you for the offer, but I must first see to the others." Captain Ryan followed her away. "I had thought you might have some trouble handling a sword. The men who unsaddled your horse told me they found dismembered hands and fingers caught in the girth strap, and a few other places. Kaelin smiled at men she passed. They lifted a hand or bowed their heads in greeting. Have you forgotten who my father was? He taught me the use of a sword. Mother Confessor, that doesn't mean... Lieutenant Sloan was killed. He fell silent a moment. I know. They told me. He put a hand under her arm when she stumbled. You don't look so good. Some of those men who were poisoned look better than you. It's just that I haven't slept for so long. She didn't tell him that she had also used her power again. I'm dead tired. Back outside her shelter, Tossadin offered her a bowl of beans. Her fingers covered her mouth as her eyes winced closed. She thought she might faint at the sight and smell of food. Tossadin seemed to understand and took it away. Prindon put a hand under her other arm. Mother Confessor, you must eat, but you need rest even more. She nodded her agreement. I made you some tea. I thought it might be a comfort. He pointed with his chin to the shelter. It is inside. Yes, tea might help settle my stomach. She gave the captain's arm a squeeze. Wake me in the morning, when it's time for the next attack. I'll go with the men. If you're rested enough, only if... She cut him off with a look. Yes, Mother Confessor, I'll wake you myself. Inside the cozy shelter, she sipped the hot tea and shook. Her head was spinning. She could only take a few swallows before she fell into the bedroll. She would be better, she told herself, when she was rested. She could feel her power coming to life at last, swelling with its familiar force within her chest. She curled up under her fur mantle, thinking of the thousand things that needed to be tended to. She worried about the men who were at that moment attacking, and the ones who would go next. She fretted for them all. They were so young. She worried about what she had started. War. But she hadn't started it. She had only refused to abandon the lives of innocent people to assure death. She'd had no choice. As the Mother Confessor, she had a responsibility to the people of the Midlands. If the Imperial Order wasn't stopped, untold thousands would die at their hands, and those who lived would live as slaves to the Order. She thought about the young women at the palace in Ebenicia. Their faces floated and spun through her mind's eye. She was too weary to weep for them. When they were avenged, there would be enough time to weep. She seethed with a lust for vengeance. She resolved that she would hound the army of the Imperial Order to their graves. In the morning, she would once more lead her men against the enemy. She would see it through. She would see those girls and all the others avenged. If the Imperial Order wasn't stopped, not only would innocent people be slaughtered, but all magic, good and bad, all the creatures of magic, would perish. Richard had magic. Her mind drifted to Richard. And then she did weep, weep in the hope that he would not hate her for what she had done. She prayed that he would be able to understand and forgive her. She had done the best for him, to save the living. Her tears flowed, finally sobbing to a stop. Her thoughts of Richard swept the jumbled, tangled, flashing images from her head. Her mind focused, for the first time in days, it seemed, on things other than fighting and killing. Focused on who she was, who Richard was. Focused on important matters, floating in the fog at the back of her awareness. Thinking about Richard brought back to her the things that were important, but which she seemed to have forgotten. There were things other than the Order that were important, very important. It seemed as if this war had distracted her from higher imperatives, from those important matters. She thought about Darkenrall. Darkenrall had marked Richard. The Sisters of the Light had taken him. She was supposed to be going to Adendrill to help Richard, to get Zed to help Richard. Richard had to stop the Keeper. Kaelin frowned in the darkness under her mantle. The veil to the underworld was still torn. She shouldn't be running around swinging a sword at Daharan troops. She remembered Darkenrall's laughter. She touched her neck and felt the swollen, broken skin. It had been real. He had laughed at how foolish she was. Kaelin sat up. What was she doing? She had to help stop the Keeper. Shota had said the veil was torn. So had Darkenrall and Denna. Kaelin had seen a Skreeling, a creature straight from the underworld. She had spoken with Denna. Denna had taken Richard's place with the Keeper so that he could live to repair the tear in the veil. Kaylin was supposed to be going to Zed. She shouldn't be running around playing at soldier. But if the Imperial Order wasn't stopped, but if the veil was torn... She had to get to Adendril. She had to get to Zed. These men could fight a war without her. That was their job. She was the Mother Confessor. She shouldn't be running around foolishly risking her life when the Midlands, the world of the living, was in danger. That was what Darkenroll was laughing at, her foolishness. She picked up the cup of tea Prindon had made for her and held it in her hands, letting it warm her fingers. She was the leader of the Midlands and had to act like a leader and tend to the most important things above all else, to the things that she and only she could do. She downed the rest of the tea, making a face at the bitter taste. Kaylin lay down again, holding the teacup on her stomach. The faces of the dead women again floated before her eyes. The weapon that most readily conquers reason is terror and violence. That was what the enemy had done to her. The horror of what they had done had conquered her reason. That very day, she and her men could have been lost if the scouts had all been killed. Without those guides, they would have been lost and vincible to the enemy. That was what she was, a guide. She was a guide to the Midlands. She belonged in Adendril, guiding the council, pulling everyone together against the threat. Without that guidance, they would be ignorant and lost in the fog of what was happening. She was also Richard's guide for the help he needed. It was up to her to get Zed's help. Without that guidance, Richard and all the living were lost. She sat up, staring into the candle flame. No wonder Darkenroll had been laughing at her. She had been letting the enemy conquer her reason. She had almost been diverted from her duties and given the Keeper time to work his plans. She knew now what she had to do. She had done enough to get these men started, had shown them their responsibility and how to carry it out. Now they had the knowledge they needed to conquer the enemy. What she had done was right, but now they had their jobs, and she had hers. This army knew what to do now. She had to get to Adendril. Having decided, it felt as if a great weight had been lifted from her. But at the same time, she felt infused with purpose. Richard, even though he wasn't with her, had helped her find the truth in all the confusion and helped her to see her true duty. She looked in the teacup, but she had drunk the tea, and the cup was empty. Her head felt fuzzy. Her eyes wouldn't stay open. She was so tired she could no longer sit up. As she flopped back down, she wondered what Richard was doing, where he was, probably with the sisters, learning how to control the gift. She prayed to the good spirits that they would help him realize how much she loved him. Her arm, suddenly too heavy to hold up, fell to the side, and the cup rolled away. Sleep was as dreamless as death. Chapter 46. She plunged into a void, a wasteland of brutal blackness, bereft of all sense of time or awareness of place. She was lost to the world. The dark deprivation was beyond understanding or comfort. Drifting in the depths of that void, she felt something. That there was something to feel sparked hope in her, hope of escape from this forsaken nowhere. With that tingling of sense, she snatched desperately at substance, as if clutching a rock in a vast, dark river. Trying to fight back from the suffocating darkness brought sensation to her body. She floated back, her head throbbing with a dull ache, and numbly she tried to understand what it was that was happening to her. Someone called to her. "Mother Confessor," they called. No, that wasn't her name. It came to her. Kaylin, that was her name. Hands shook her. Someone was calling to her and shaking her. She returned from a great distance. Kaylin's eyes opened and the world spun. Captain Ryan was gripping her shoulder, shaking her, calling to her. She drew a deep breath of cold air into her lungs. She twisted her arms away from him, but then had to put her hands back on the ground for support. Concern creased his features. "Mother Confessor, are you all right?"
I...
She looked about. Tossadin was there, too. She sat up the rest of the way and put her cold fingers to her forehead.
"My head. What time is it?"
"It will be light soon." With a look of concern, he glanced back over his shoulder at Tossadin. "We came to wake you, as you told me to. The swordsmen are ready to go." Kaylin pushed her mantle off. I'll be ready in a moment, and we can... She remembered her decision to get to Aidenvale. She had to get to Zed. She had to get help for Richard. If it was true that the veil was torn... Mother Confessor, you don't look well. You've been through a lot. You hadn't slept in days, and you've only just gotten a few hours of sleep. I think you need more. Yes, she did. Though she could feel that her power was back, she definitely did not feel recovered. She put a hand on his arm. Captain, I must leave for Aidenvale. I must... He gave her a little smile. You rest. You're not rested enough to travel. Stay here and rest. When we get back, you'll be rested and you can leave. She nodded, still clutching his sleeve for support. Yes, and then I must leave. I thought about it last night. I must get to Aidenvale. I'll rest until you get back, but then I must leave. She looked about. Only Tossadin was there with the captain. Where's Chandelin and Prindon? My brother went to check on their sentries, to make sure that they didn't place any. Tossadin said, so that our attack will be without warning. Chandelin is attacking with the pikemen, Captain Ryan said. I'm to meet him with the swordsmen for the next attack. Kaelin comforted her sore lip. Tossadin, tell Chandelin that when your attack is finished, we must leave. You three be careful. You must get me to Aidenvale. She could hardly keep her eyes open. She could hardly bring forth the energy to speak. She knew she wasn't able to travel yet. I'll rest until you return. Captain Ryan sighed with relief that she wasn't going with them, that she would be safe here. I'll leave some men to stand guard while you rest. She gestured with her hand. This camp is well hidden. I'm safe up here. He leaned forward insistently. 10 or 12 men are not going to make any difference to us, and I would be better able to put my mind to our task if I'm not worrying about you all alone back here. She didn't have the energy to argue. All right. She flopped back down. With a troubled frown, Tossadin pulled the mantle up over her. She was sinking back into the blackness as the two of them crawled out of the opening. She tried to keep herself from going into that unfeeling place, but she was helplessly swept away. The crushing weight of the void closed in around her. She tried to escape its grasp, tried to come back up, but the darkness was too thick, like being encased in mud. She was trapped, still being sucked deeper. She felt a surge of panic. She tried to think, but could not form thoughts into coherent concepts. She had the sense that something was wrong, but could not bring her mind to bear on the solution. This time, instead of surrendering, she focused all her strength on thoughts of Richard, on her need to help him, and the darkness then was not a total void. She had an inkling of time, sensing its incremental passing. She felt as if she were sleeping her whole lifetime away, as she tenaciously kept Richard in her thoughts. Her concern for him, and her anxiety over the strangeness of the depthless sleep, let her slowly, methodically, claw her way back. Yet it seemed to take hours. With a desperate gasp, she came awake. Her head swirled with a throbbing ache. Her whole body tingled with sharp little pricks of pain. She laboriously pushed herself up to sit, staring about her dark shelter. The candle was burned almost all the way down. Quiet hummed in her ears. She thought maybe she needed cold air to wake up. Her arms and legs felt thick and heavy as she crawled through the opening of the shelter. Outside it was dusk. She looked up at the first stars winking through the trees. Her breath fogged before her face as she stood on wobbly legs. Kaelin took a step and promptly tripped over something, falling on her face in the snow. Her cheek still against the ground, she opened her eyes. Inches away, glassy eyes were staring at her. The side of a young man's face was lying against the snow close to hers. It was his leg she had tripped over. It felt as if her bones wanted to leap out of her skin and run. His throat was gaping open, his neck nearly sliced in two, letting his head bend back from his body at an impossible angle. She could see the opening of his severed windpipe. Clotted blood covered snow. A bloom of bile rose up into her throat. She swallowed, forcing it back down. Slowly, lifting her head, she saw the dark forms of other bodies. They were all Galleon. Every sword still rested in its scabbard. They had died without the chance to fight back. Kaelin's legs tensed, wanting to run, but she strained to be still. In the dull fog of the half-sleep she couldn't throw off, she struggled to think. Her mind seemed to be mired in a dreamlike stupor, unable to concentrate. Someone had killed these men and could still be around. She somehow had to force herself to think. She touched her fingers to the dead soldier's hand. It was still warm. This must have just happened. Maybe that was what had wakened her. She peered up among the trees. Men moved in the shadows. They had seen her and were moving into the clearing around her. They laughed and hooted as they came forward, and she saw who they were, close to a dozen Daharans and a couple of Keltons, men of the Imperial Order. With a gasp, Kaelin sprang to her feet. One man, the one closest, had a puffy red wound down the left side of his face, from his temple to his jaw where Nick's hoof had caught him. Ragged stitches held the black and red flesh closed. He gave a sneering smile with the good side of his mouth. It was General Riggs.
"Well, well, I have found you at last, Confessor."
Kaelin flinched with the rest of the men when a dark form screaming a battle cry crashed through the underbrush. As the men turned, Kaelin bolted the other way. Before she turned, she had seen the fading light glint off a huge war axe. The crescent-shaped blade struck down two men in one swing. It was Orsk. He must have been searching for her, too, so he could protect her. One touched by a confessor never gave up. Her legs felt thick and tingled, as if she had slept on them. But she ran as hard as she could. Yelling and screaming erupted behind her. Steel rang against steel. Orsk roared as he tore into the men after her. Spruce branches slapped her face as she staggered through the trees. Dead limbs and brush snagged her pants and shirt. Dizzy, she stumbled through the drifts. Snow splashed against her face as she crashed through drooping boughs. She couldn't make her legs run fast enough. The man on her heels grunted as he dove for her. His arms snared her legs and she went down hard. She spit snow out as she kicked and struggled to get away. The man clawed his way up her legs, grabbing hold of her belt and throwing himself on top of her. The red face with the angry wound down one side hovered right over hers. In triumph, he grinned wickedly. Back through the trees, she could hear the sounds of furious battle. She and Riggs were alone as she struggled to squirm away. One fist grabbed her hair and held her head to the ground. His other fist punched her in the side, knocking the wind from her lungs. He hit her again. Nausea swept through her in a hot wave as she fought to get her breath.
"I've got you now, Confessor. You'll not get away again. You may as well resign yourself to it."
He was alone. What was he thinking? She slapped a hand to his chest. It seemed a puzzle to her that a lone man would think he could take a confessor.
"You have no one, Riggs," she managed to say under the weight of him. "You're lost. You are mine." "I don't think so," he sneered. "He said you can't use your power now."
He lifted her head and thumped it against the ground. Her vision blurred. She tried to concentrate on what she needed to do. He lifted her head again to bang it against the ground. Though she was bewildered by what he had said, she had to do it now, before he knocked her unconscious, before it was too late, now, when time was hers. In the silence of her mind, as she lifted her head, she let her confessor's power sweep through her. She released her restraint. There was thunder with no sound. The impact of power of magic made Riggs flinch. Tree branches all around shook with a jolt. Snow dropped down, splattering on his back and her face. His eyes went wide, his jaw slack.
"Mistress, command me."
With the last of her strength, she managed to ask, "Who told you my power couldn't harm you?"
"Mistress, it was..."
The bloody point of an arrow exploded from the prominence on the fore of his throat. The broad steel point stopped a scant inch from her chin. His eyes teared as his mouth moved and blood frothed, but no words came forth. As his breath rattled from his lungs, he began slumping onto her. A fist grabbed the shoulder of his uniform and pulled Riggs away. At first, she thought it would be Orsk, but it wasn't.
"Mother Confessor!"
A worried Prindon peered down at her.
"Are you hurt? Did he hurt you?"
He hastily rolled the general off her and offered his hand to help her up as his eyes glided down the length of her lying in the snow.
She stared up at him, but didn't take his hand. Using her power had left her exhausted and limp as never before. His customary grin spread on his face as he shouldered his bow.
I can see you are not hurt. You look very fine.
You didn't need to kill him. I had already used my power on him. He was mine. He was just about to tell me who it was that said I could not harm.
Her whole body tingled with apprehension at the way his eyes took her in.
His familiar grin ran a cold shiver up her arms and the back of her neck, making the fine hairs stand stiffly out.
Orsk crashed through the trees.
Mistress, are you safe?
She could hear others coming in the woods behind him. She heard Chandelin's voice. Prindon swiftly knocked an arrow. Orsk lifted his axe with one big fist.
Prindon, no, don't hurt him!
Prindon drew his bow.
Orsk, run!
The big man spun without question and darted back into the brush. An arrow followed him in. She heard the arrow strike something solid. She could hear Orsk stumble through the barren undergrowth, breaking branches and saplings. The snapping of twigs died out, and then she heard him hit the ground. She tried to stand, but feebly fell back. It felt as if she had no bones and her muscles were melting. Her strength was gone. The blackness was trying to suck her back in. Prindon turned his grin back to her as he shouldered his bow once more. Kaelin strained to bring forth the strength to speak. It came in a breathy whisper.
Prindon, why did you do that?
He shrugged. So we can be alone. His smile widened. Before they chop off your head.
Prindon.
Prindon had told Riggs her power wouldn't hurt him, so she would expend it on him and would have nothing left. Her legs trembled with the effort of trying to lift herself. She fell back again as he watched. A voice came through the trees. It was a breathless Chandelin calling to her. In another direction she heard Tossadin calling. She tried to scream to them. Only a weak, hoarse complaint came from her throat. Darkness pressed into her. Maybe she was still asleep, she thought. She could hardly speak, hardly move, just like a nightmare. She wished it were. But she knew it was no dream. Prindon turned to the insistent calls. Kaelin dug her heels into the snow and, with a mighty effort, managed to scoot herself back. Her hand fell on a stout maple limb lying on the ground. Prindon rushed to her. She focused all her fear, her dread, her pain and horror at what was happening into action. It took everything she had. Prindon reached for her. Kaelin came up swinging the stout limb. Prindon ducked and snatched her would-be club, wrenching it from her grip. He spun her to him and curled his arm around her head, over her mouth, as she tried to warn Chandelin. Though he wasn't big, she knew Prindon to be incredibly strong, but in her present state even a child could have had his way with her. Chandelin ran up behind them, a knife in hand. Kaelin bit into Prindon's arm. She cried out as Prindon spun with impossible speed and strength, catching Chandelin across the side of the head with a branch. The sound of the hollow thunk was sickening. The blow knocked Chandelin into the boughs of a fir tree. As she twisted from Prindon's grip, she saw blood on the snow around Chandelin. Tossadin, breathing hard, burst through the trees.
What is happening? Prindon!
He saw them and stopped in his tracks. He looked to Chandelin and then to Prindon. Prindon peered back over his shoulder at his brother, speaking in his own tongue.
Chandelin tried to kill us. I came here just as he tried to kill the Mother Confessor. Help me, she is hurt.
Kaelin collapsed to her knees, crying out,
No! Tossadin, no!
Tossadin ran toward them.
What is this trouble Chandelin told me of? What is wrong with you, brother? What have you done?
Help me, the Mother Confessor has been hurt.
Tossadin gripped his brother's shoulder and spun him around.
Prindon, what have you?
Prindon slammed a knife into his brother's chest. Tossadin's eyes went wide in surprise. His mouth opened, but no words came. With a wheeze, his legs buckled and he crumpled to the ground. Kaelin cried out. He had been stabbed through the heart. Chandelin sat up with a groggy groan. He put his hand to his bleeding scalp. Keeping an eye to the wounded man, Prindon pulled a bone box from his waist pouch. He had a full box of bandu. He hadn't given her all his poison. Helpless to stop him, Kalin saw Prindon wipe a generous gob of poison onto the arrow's point. Dazed, Chandelin held his head in his hands as he tried to gather his wits. Prindon drew the bowstring to his cheek. She knew he was aiming for Chandelin's throat. Just as Prindon released the arrow, she managed to throw herself against his legs, making the arrow go astray from its target. It still hit Chandelin in the shoulder. The back of his fist across her face sent her sprawling. Powered by sheer terror, Kalin started scrambling away on her hands and knees. The snow was freezing her fingers. The knees of her pants were soaked and icy wet. She concentrated on the cold to try to revive herself. She glanced over her shoulder as she clambered away. Prindon drew another arrow from his quiver and wiped it in the poison as he watched her struggle, as he had watched Chandelin. A cry came from her throat as she staggered to her feet and ran. A nightmare. It had to be a nightmare. The arrow felt like a club hitting the back of her left leg. She screamed and fell to her face. Her leg flamed in hot pain. A tingling, prickling sensation spread through the muscle. The pain seared through the bone into her hip. Prindon was suddenly over her. He knelt down and gripped the arrow sticking from the back of her leg. He put his other hand against her bottom to hold her and yanked the arrow free. Kalin could feel the tingle of the poison going up her leg. "Don't worry, Mother Confessor. I did not use much poison on your arrow, like on Chandelin's, just enough to make sure you will give me no trouble. He will be dead in another minute. You will live long enough to have your head chopped off." His hand stroked her bottom. "If they do not wait too long." Prindon leaned over her. "It is too cold out here. We will go back." He took hold of her wrist and started dragging her across the snow. In her mind, Kalin fought him. She struggled, she shrieked, she hit, but she couldn't make her body obey. She was as limp as a rag doll being dragged over the snow. She could feel the poison spreading to her ribs. Tears streamed down her cheeks. Orsk. Tossadin. Chandelin. Her. How could Prindon do such a thing? She sobbed as her face slid over the snow. How could he? His own brother. He had stabbed his own brother as if it meant nothing. Who could do such a thing? How could anyone do such a thing? How could anyone but a... Baneling. She gasped with the realization. She had never fully believed in Banelings before. Wizards had told her they were real, but she never believed the wizards knew for sure. She had always thought it might be superstitious nonsense that sent people hunting things in the dark, things from the underworld, things bidden from the Keeper's own dark whispers. But now she knew. She was in the grips of a Baneling. Dear spirits, how could no one know? He had helped her so many times. He had befriended her. So he could be close to her and keep track of her for the Keeper. He was a Baneling. Darkenrall had laughed at her because she was so stupid. She knew now, without a doubt, the veil was torn. Darkenrall had promised her such things. He had come to tear the veil the rest of the way, and she had foolishly thought she was in control of what she was doing, but all the time Darkenrall and the Keeper had watched her through Prindon's eyes. But why wait until now? Why let her fight in this war? Let all these people die before he snatched her? Kalin knew why. The Keeper was of the world of the dead. Bringing death to the world of the living was what he wanted. He resented the living. That was why he wanted the veil torn, so he could bring death to the world of the living. He coveted this world's breath of life. He enjoyed watching people die. He did not wish to stop it too soon, to stop the suffering, the fear, the pain. It felt as if her arm might tear from its socket as Prindon tugged her through the brush and over a log half covered over with snow. The tingling of the poison had spread across her chest. Her left leg had gone numb. At least, she thought, she couldn't feel how much the arrow wound hurt. The round iron point had hit the bone, and Prindon had not been gentle about pulling it out. At least it was numb now. When they reached the shelter, she could see bodies all about, not only the Galleon men, but the men of the Imperial Order that Orsk had killed. Soon, when Prindon was finished with her, he would turn her over to the army of the Order, and she would be beheaded. It would be over, and there was nothing she could do to stop it. She couldn't even fight back. She would never see Richard again. Dear spirits, he would never know how much she loved him. Prindon dragged her through the opening to the shelter and heaved her onto the mat of boughs. As he lit two more candles from the one that was almost burned down, she struggled to breathe, to remain conscious.
"I wish to be able to see you," he explained with a lecherous smile. "You are very fine to look upon. I wish to see all of you."
She had always liked his smile. She didn't like it now. Prindon took off his fur mantle and tossed it aside. His smile vanished. His eyes were wild. He didn't speak in her tongue anymore, but only his own.
"Take off your clothes. I wish to look upon you first, to be aroused by the sight of you."
Even if he had held a knife to her throat, she wouldn't have been able to obey. She couldn't move her arms.
"Prindon," she managed to whisper, "the men will be back soon. They will catch you here." "They will be busy. They are having a fight like they never expected."
His smile returned. "They will not be back soon, if at all." The smile changed in an instant to a twisted expression of hot rage.
"I said take off your clothes!"
"Prindon, you are my friend. Please don't do this."
He crawled on top of her, yanking at her belt.
"Then I will do it for you!"
Tears over her helplessness, over the loss of a friend to this madness, to the keeper, ran down her cheeks.
"Why, Prindon, why?"
He sat up, as if surprised by the question.
"The Great Spirit said I may have you before he takes your spirit to the underworld. He said I am to have a reward for the work I have done. The Great Spirit is pleased with me for delivering you to him."
The bite on her neck stung with prickling pain. She shivered with sorrow for Tassadin and Chandelin. She shivered at her own desolate, hopeless situation. The tingling from the poison had spread across her shoulders. She could feel the slight twinge of its first touch moving up her throat. He squeezed her under him as he kissed the place on her neck where Darkin Rawl's lips had been, where the bite was. The pain, the vision, sent a silent shriek through her.
"Prindon, please. After you have me, let me go."
She hoped that hearing her words in his tongue would mean more to him.
"Please."
He lifted his head away, looking into her eyes.
"It would do no good for me to leave you. You have been poisoned by the tea and by the arrow. You will die soon anyway. You must be beheaded before you die of the poison. It will be better. You will not suffer the poison's end. That is my mercy to you."
Prindon grinned as he started to bend over her again, kissing her neck. Tears ran down her cheeks.
"I hate you," she wept. "You and your Great Spirit."
He sprang up, standing as best he could in the small shelter, with his fists at his sides as he glared down at her.
"You are to be mine. I have been promised I will have you. Your power cannot harm me. I saw to that. It is used up for now. You are to be mine. If you will not give yourself to me, I will take you. You brought your hateful magic to my people, your hateful ways. You are evil, and I will take you to conquer your wickedness. The Great Spirit has said it shall be so."
Prindon pulled his buckskin shirt off over his head, off his wiry frame. He leapt full onto her, landing with a grunt. His face was right above hers. They stared at each other in surprise. He had no idea what had happened. She knew what had happened, but had no idea how. She could feel his warm blood flowing over her fist. His pupils expanded. He coughed, splattering little droplets of blood across her face. With a long, slow gurgle, he went limp as his last breath left his lungs. Tears ran down Kaelin's face. She didn't have the strength to push him off her, as she could hardly breathe under his weight. And so she lay still, feeling his blood drain over her hand between her breasts and soak into her shirt. The tingling of the poison had risen up her neck. Chapter 47. In the tingling blackness, her lip hurt. Something was jabbing against the cut, making it throb. Something was in her mouth. She thought it felt like a finger poking into her mouth.
"Swallow!"
Kaelin frowned in the darkness in her sleep.
"Swallow! Do you hear me? Swallow!"
Making a sour face, she did as commanded. The finger pushed more of the dry things into her mouth.
Swallow again.
She swallowed, hoping the voice would leave her alone now. It did. She sank back down into the tingling void. She drifted in the nowhere place, unaware. She had no concept of time, no idea how long she floated. With a gasp, her eyes opened. She blinked around at her shelter. The candles were burned halfway down. Her fur mantle was covering her. Chandelin leaned over, peering down at her. A broad smile spread on his lips. He let out a long sigh of relief.
"You are back," he said. "You are safe now."
"Chandelin?" She tried to make sense of what she was seeing. "Am I in the underworld, or are you not dead?" He laughed quietly.
"Chandelin is hard to kill."
She worked her tongue, trying to wet her dry mouth. She was awake, really awake, for the first time in as long as she could remember. It seemed she had forgotten what it was like to be awake, how vibrant it felt. Still, she did not move, afraid the blackness would return.
"But Prindon shot you with a 10-step arrow. I saw it."
He turned a bit, looking away in chagrin. She could see that his black hair was matted with dried blood. He flicked his hand, as if uneasy that he had to explain.
"Remember I told you that our ancestors took Kwasindo before they went into battle, so that if they were shot with a 10-step arrow, the poison would not kill them?"
She nodded. He tenderly tested his wounded scalp.
"Well, in honor of my ancestors, my warrior ancestors, I ate some of the Kwasindo leaves before I went to fight. The Kwasindo you gave to me back at that city."
His eyebrows lifted, as if further justification was needed. "It was to honor my ancestors." Kaelin smiled warmly to him as she put a hand to his arm. "You have done your ancestors proud." He helped her sit up. In the dim light, she saw that Prindon lay next to her on his back. The bone knife made from Chandelin's grandfather's bones, the one she had worn at her arm, jutted from Prindon's chest. The black feathers fanned out around the hilt end, draped like a shroud over the fatal wound. Somehow she had managed to put that knife between them when Prindon had leaped on her. Somehow. She remembered her numb, helpless plight. She remembered the tingling feeling of the poison, and that she couldn't move. She remembered her terror. She remembered Prindon's leap onto her. But she didn't remember pulling the knife. Her voice trembled.
"I'm so sorry, Chandelin."
Her fingers covered her mouth. "I'm so sorry that I killed your friend." Chandelin glared at the body.
"He was not my friend. My friends do not try to kill me."
He put a comforting hand to her shoulder.
"He was sent by the great dark spirit of the dead. His heart was taken by evil."
Kaelin clutched his sleeve. "Chandelin, that great dark spirit of the dead is trying to escape from behind the veil. He wants to pull us all behind the veil into the world of the dead." His brown eyes studied hers.
"I believe you. We must get you to Adendril, so you may help stop him."
She sagged with relief.
"Thank you, Chandelin. Thank you for understanding, and for saving me with the Kwasindo."
Kaelin clutched his arm.
"The men. Prindon set a trap for them. What time is it?"
He made a comforting hushing sound.
"When Captain Ryan came to Tossadin and me before the attack, I asked where you were. I knew you would want to be with them. He told me that you were sick, that you could not wake. It sounded to me like Bandu. Captain Ryan said that you would not eat and would have only tea Prindon made for you. I knew then what was happening. I knew you had been poisoned, and the only thing you had was tea. Tossadin and I were greatly worried for you. We checked to see if the enemy had changed position. We saw that they were waiting for the attack where we had planned it at first. I made the men change the attack and come from a different place than expected. As soon as I gave the new orders, we rushed back here. I knew Prindon had betrayed us, but Tossadin thought there must be some other explanation. He trusted his brother and did not want to think evil of him. He paid for his trust, his mistake, with his life."
Kaelin looked away in the uneasy quiet. She frowned back at him.
"What of the arrow? What of the wound on your head? We must see to your wounds."
Chandelin pulled the neck of his buckskin shirt to the side, revealing a bandage over his left shoulder.
"The men returned in the night. They stitched my head.
It is not as bad as it looks. They also took out the arrow. He winced as he pulled the shirt back up on his shoulder. I taught Brynden well. He used a bladed arrow. Bladed arrows do more harm coming out than going in. One of the men, the one who cuts and sews the wounded, cut out the arrow and stitched me together. The arrow hit the bone, so it did not go in too far. My arm is stiff, and I will not be able to use it for a time. Kaelin felt her leg. There was a bandage under her pants. Did he stitch my leg, too? No. It did not need sewing just to be wrapped. I did that. Brynden used a round point on you. That is not like I taught him. I don't know why he would do that. Kaelin could feel the presence of the body next to her. He wanted to be able to get it out of me after he shot me with poison, she said quietly. He wanted it out of his way. He was going to rape me before he gave me to the enemy. Chandelin watched the body, not wanting to look at her, and said he was glad that had not happened. She touched his left hand. And I'm glad it was your shoulder and not your throat. He frowned. I taught Brynden how to shoot. He would never miss my throat from that distance. Why did he not shoot my throat? She shrugged, feigning ignorance. He grunted suspiciously. Chandelin, why is his body still in here? Why didn't you drag him out? He moved his wounded arm a bit with his other, making it more comfortable. Because Grandfather's spirit knife is still in him. He regarded her with a serious expression. You have used the aid of Grandfather's bones, his spirit, to protect yourself to take another life. Grandfather's spirit is bonded to you now. No other may touch his bone knife now. It is yours, and only you may touch it. You must remove it. Kaelin momentarily contemplated whether or not she could just leave the knife where it was and bury it with the body. She thought maybe the bone knife should be put to rest too. But she discarded the thought. To the mud people, this was powerful spirit magic. She would insult Chandelin if she rejected the knife. She thought, too, that maybe she would be insulting the spirit of Chandelin's grandfather if she didn't take back the knife. She wasn't entirely sure that it wasn't the spirit in the bone knife that had killed Brynden to save her. She didn't know how the knife had gotten into her hand. Kaelin reached out and wrapped her fingers around the round end protruding from Prindon's chest. It made a sucking sound as she pulled it from the body. She wiped it clean on the balsam boughs covering the floor. Kaelin brought the round end to her lips and kissed it lightly. Thank you, Spirit Grandfather, for saving my life. Somehow it seemed the right thing to do. Chandelin smiled as she slid the bone knife into the band on her arm. You are a good mud person. You knew what to do without me telling you. Grandfather's spirit will watch over you always. Chandelin, we must get to Adendril. The veil to the underworld is torn. We've done what we must to help these men. I must do my job now. When we first found these men, I did not want to stay with them. I wanted to be away from their fight so that you would be safe. He stared off at nothing. Somehow I forgot that thought, and all I wanted to do was fight and kill the enemy.
I know, she whispered. That happened to me, too. I forgot all about what I was supposed to be doing. It's almost as if we, too, listened to the great dark spirit. The veil is torn. Maybe that's why we were distracted.
You think that this veil is torn, and because of that we forgot what we were to do and wanted only to kill?
Chandelin, I don't know the answers to these things. I must get to Adendril. The wizard will know what to do. Richard needs help. We have taken enough time here. We must not waste any more. We must talk to the men and then be on our way. Are they out there?
He nodded.
Then let's get going.
She started to rise, but he put his good hand to her arm and stopped her. They have been waiting outside your shelter all night. I would not let them come inside. He took his hand back as he seemed to search for the right words. I feared greatly that you would die this night. I didn't know if I had given you the Kwasindo in time. Brynden had been giving you poison without our knowing it for a long time. You almost went to the spirit world. If you had died, I would never be able to return to my people again. But that is not why I am glad you live. I am glad because you are a good mud person. You are a protector to our people, the same as Chandelin. We each fight in our own way. He lifted an eyebrow. Lately, you have been fighting too much like Chandelin fights.
You are good at it, but you should leave that to me and fight in the way you are meant to fight.
Kaelin smiled. You're right. Thank you for sitting with me all night. It was good to have you near. I'm sorry you were hurt.
He shrugged. Someday, when I find a woman for myself, I will have scars to show her, so she may see how brave Chandelin is.
Kaelin laughed. I'm sure she will be impressed with your bravery when you were shot with an arrow.
Chandelin gave her a crooked look. It does not prove I was brave because I was shot with an arrow. Anyone can be shot.
He lifted his chin. I am brave because I did not cry out when the arrow was cut from me.
Someday, Kaelin thought, some fortunate woman would have her hands full with this one.
I'm glad the good spirits watched over you, and you are with me.
He narrowed his eyes as he peered at her. I do not know what happened, but I think Prindon missed my throat because you were watching over me, too.
She only grinned.
When she looked to the body, her grin withered. She stroked the fur of her mantle.
Poor Tossadin. He loved his brother. I'll miss him.
Chandelin glanced to the body. I have known them since they were young boys. They both followed me around, begging me to teach them, begging to be one of my men.
He hung his head in silence.
Finally, he returned his attention to her. The men are worried greatly about you. They are waiting.
Kaelin followed as he crawled out on his knees and one hand. She dragged the sword with her.
Outside in the light, there was a sudden rustle of sound as men rose to their feet. Captain Ryan rushed forward, but a big man, with one arm in a sling, thrust his good arm across the captain's chest, stopping him cold. He held a monstrous war axe in his fist.
Orsk! You are alive, too?
His eyes were red from weeping. Kaelin remembered the way her father had wept when her mother, his mistress, was ill.
Mistress!
Tears sprang anew to his eyes.
You are well. What do you wish?
Orsk, these men are all my friends. None of them will hurt me. You do not need to keep them away. I'm safe. It would please me if you just sat quietly for now.
Instantly, he flopped to the ground.
Kaelin gave a questioning frown to Chandelin.
Chandelin shrugged.
I saw him fight to protect you, and Prindon wanted to kill him, so I gave him Kwasindo. The men dug the arrow from his back. I am not sure how badly he is hurt. He has no interest in his wound, only in you. I was only able to keep him out of the shelter by telling him you needed to be left alone, or you might not recover, but he would not leave this spot as long as you were inside.
Kaelin sighed as she gazed at the grisly face staring silently up at her. She could hardly stand to look at the jagged white scar, and the one eye that was sewn shut.
She returned her attention to an impatient Captain Ryan, and the hundreds of faces behind him.
How goes the war?
The war? Dash the war, are you all right? You had us scared to death.
He cast a hot glance at Chandelin, and then at Orsk, sitting in the snow.
These two wouldn't even let me have a peek at you to see how you were.
That's their job, Kaelin said. She gave them a warm smile.
Thank you all for your concern. Chandelin has saved me.
Well, what happened? This place was a mess. The dozen men I left here were slaughtered by a Troga. Prindon and Tossadin are dead. And there were dead men of the Order. We feared they killed you.
Kaelin realized Chandelin had told them nothing.
One of the dead men, off in that direction, is General Riggs of the Imperial Order.
Orsk here,
she pointed down to the one-eyed man, killed most of the men of the Order. They came here to get me. Prindon killed our guards and his brother, and he tried to kill me.
Whispers and gasps spread among the men.
Captain Ryan's eyes looked like they would pop from his head.
Prindon? Not Prindon! Dear spirits, why?
She waited until silence settled over the men. She spoke in a quiet tone.
Prindon was a baneling.
Stunned silence was all she heard for a moment, and then the worried whispers of baneling spread back through the ranks.
You men are doing a fine job, but now you must fight on without me. I must get to Adendril.
Disappointed murmurs filled the air.
I would not leave you if I did not know you were up to the task. You have all proven your worth and your heart in battle. You are men, the equal of any.
The men stood a little taller. They listened intently to her, as if hearing their general.
I am proud of each and every one of you. You are heroes of the Midlands. This army of the Imperial Order, threat though it is representative of a larger threat to the Midlands, to the world of the living. That the Keeper would send a baneling to stop me is proof of that. I believe the Imperial Order is aligned with the Keeper. I must now turn my attention to this threat. I know you will fight on, as you have sworn, and show the enemy no quarter. I know the days of the Order are numbered.
Kaelin realized that her neck didn't hurt. She touched her fingers to the bite. It was gone. Suddenly, she felt that perhaps she had escaped the Keeper's grasp in more ways than one. With a serious demeanor, she regarded the young faces that intently watched her. Though you will fight on without quarter, you must not let yourselves become what you are fighting. The enemy fights to kill and to enslave. You fight for life and freedom. Keep that always uppermost in your hearts. Do not let yourselves become what you hate. I know how easy it is to do. It almost happened to me.
Kaelin put a fist into the air. I promise to never forget a one of you. Promise me that when this is finished, both the threat from the Imperial Order and the threat from the Keeper, that you will one day all come to Adendrill, so the Midlands may honor your sacrifice. The men all lifted a fist in pledge. A cheer went up. Captain Ryan, please tell the men at the other camps my words. I wish I could speak to them all myself, but I must leave at once. He assured her it would be done. Kaelin lifted the sword in both hands, holding it out. King Wyborn wielded this sword in battle to protect his land. The Mother Confessor has wielded it in defense of the Midlands. I now place it in capable hands. Captain Ryan's fingers carefully lifted the sword from hers. He held it as if holding the crown of Galia itself. A beaming grin lit his face. I will carry it with pride, Mother Confessor. Thank you for everything you have taught us. When you first found us, we were boys. Thank you for making us into men. You have taught us not only to fight better, but more importantly, what it means to be soldiers and to be protectors of the Midlands. He took the hilt in his fist and held the sword skyward as he turned to his men.
Three cheers for the Mother Confessor!
As she listened to the three wild cheers, Kaelin realized that in all her life, she had never heard anyone cheer the Mother Confessor before. She had to strain to keep her surprise from showing. She lifted a kiss on her fingers and thanked them all. Captain Ryan, I wish to take Nick, and I will need two other horses also.
Chandelin lurched forward.
Now why do you need horses?
She lifted an eyebrow to him. Chandelin, I have an arrow wound in my leg. I can hardly stand, much less walk. I need to ride if I'm to get to Adendrill. I hope you do not think me weak because of it.
His brow knotted up. Well, no. Of course you cannot be expected to walk.
His eyes turned angry again.
But why do you want two other horses?
If I ride, you must too.
Chandelin does not need to ride. I am strong.
She leaned close and spoke in his tongue. Chandelin, I know the Mud People do not ride horses. I would not expect you would know how. I will teach you. You will do fine. When you return to your people, you will have a new skill that none of them have. They will be impressed. The women will see that you are brave.
He grunted suspiciously as he scowled. Then why do we need the third horse?
We're taking Orsk.
What?
Kaelin shrugged. You can't draw a bow until your arm recovers. How will you protect me? Orsk can wield an axe with his one good arm, and you can throw a spear with yours.
He rolled his eyes. I am not going to be able to talk you out of this, am I?
No, she said with a small smile. Now we better get our things and be on our way.
Kaelin surveyed the men one last time. Her men. She gave them a salute of her fist to her heart. They all silently returned the salute. She had lost much with these men. She had gained much. Take care, each and every one of you.
Chapter 48. So, when are we going to meet your people, the ones who will guide Sister Verna and me to the palace?
Duchailu glanced back over her shoulder, pulling her mass of black hair out of the way to peer at him. She was leading her horse. Richard had grown tired of her complaints, and when she finally refused to ride any longer, he decided not to make an issue of it and let her walk. Richard had decided to walk for a while himself. Sister Verna rode behind them, watching Duchailu, like an owl from atop her horse. Soon, her cool, distant expression disturbed him. Very soon. Her attitude had slowly changed since they had left the Majendai land, as they went deeper into hers. She was no longer chatty and open, but had grown haughty and distant. Sister Verna rarely took her eyes from Duchailu, and Duchailu, in turn, didn't miss a move the sister made. They were like two cats with their fur standing on end, silent and still, but ready to spring. It wouldn't have surprised him if soon he saw their teeth bared. Richard had the feeling the two of them were constantly testing each other, but in ways he couldn't see. By the sister's attitude, he didn't think she was pleased about what she was discovering. Richard could tell from experience when the sister was touching her Han. He recognized the shroud of it in her eyes. She was touching it now. In the gathering darkness, Duchailu turned abruptly from the wide forest trail leading them on a narrow path through the thick, tangled growth. Dark water holding dense thickets of reeds and broad-leafed plants with pink and yellow trumpet-shaped flowers lurked to the sides. Richard's eyes scanned the shadows among the trees. Duchailu came to a halt at the edge of a sandy open area. She lifted the reins of her horse to Richard. "The others will join us in this place. Wait here, magic man." The term she used to address him lifted his hackles. He took the reins. "Richard, my name is Richard. I am the one who saved your neck, remember?" Duchailu looked at him thoughtfully. "Please don't ever think I do not appreciate what you have done for me, for my people. Your kindness will always be in my heart." Her eyes seemed to go out of focus, and her voice softened with regret. "But you are still a magic man." Her back straightened. "Wait here." She turned and disappeared into the forest around the clearing. Richard stood watching her vanish as Sister Verna dismounted. She took the reins to all three horses. "She is going to try to kill you now," she said, as if telling him that she thought it would rain tomorrow. Richard glared at her. "I saved her life!" Sister Verna started leading the horses to the trees. "You are a magic man to these people. They kill magic men." Richard didn't want to believe her, but he did. "Then use your Han to prevent it, sister, to preserve life, as you told Duchailu she should do with her new child." Sister Verna stroked her horse's chin. "She has use of her Han, too. That's why the sisters have always avoided these people. Some of them can use their Han, but in a way we don't understand. I've tried little things on her to test her. The spells I send at her disappear like pebbles dropped down a well. And they do not go unnoticed. Duchailu knows what I try to do and somehow is able to annul it. I told you before, these people are dangerous. I have fought every step of the way to prevent this. I warned you not to swing the axe. You saw my efforts as misguided.